The illness that had struck Vastai is one that I had not seen before myself, but I knew of it from listening to Oisin's attendants. They spoke of it with much dread. The illness might begin with horribly painful cramps, with the afflicted spewing watery vomit and excrement, and then, sometimes within hours of showing signs of the illness, the sick person, untreated, might subside into unconsciousness and then death. Or they might live as long as a day or two. As that knowledgeable traveller told you, it is spread through water that has come into contact with human waste, and if much care is not taken to prevent the effluvium of the sick and dying from contaminating nearby drinking water, it will spread. You returned from your conference with Jejume to find three people huddled around at the end of one of the tables arguing about what should be done, if anything, about what had caused all this and how it could be happening. "And where is the forest?" one of the two men asked. "Has that god abandoned us?" "That's the Lise's heir," replied the one older woman. "He's the one who desecrated the House of the Silent. And where is he?" "And where's the raven come to that?" asked the other man. "If the raven isn't helping with this, is he still holding back the tell?"
"Our own men are holding back the tell," said the first. "But we all knew it would be trouble with the lease unpaid, and now look. Maybe this won't stop until the raven gets his due."
A moment of silence, as the implications of that suggestion penetrated, as perhaps they each considered how willing they might be to attempt to compel payment of the lease.
"What's this?" you asked.
"Foolishness,"
said the landlady's daughter, coming back from the kitchen with an empty bucket.
"People are dying, and they're sitting here listening to rumours and spreading them."
"We can't all of us walk far or carry things," the older woman said.
"Plenty of people who can't walk far or carry things are helping other ways," said the landlady's daughter sharply.
"There are houses nearby with no one in them alive," said the second man. "Everybody's running around with no idea what they're doing, let alone if it's doing any good. If the raven and the forest have abandoned us, what's the point?"
"I've been sending people out," said the landlady's daughter at your querying look, "as I come across them. But I'm only guessing where they're most needed."
"We need messengers then," you said, "and someone to collect messages and tell people where they're needed. You pointed to the older woman. "Messengers will report to you, and you'll send them back out to where their news is needed."
"Who do you think you are?" she demanded. "He's the Lise's heir Mawat's right-hand man in the field against the tell," said Lord Direction Dera, who had come in from the square while you were talking. "Is anyone here fallen ill?"
"No, Lord," said the landlady's daughter.
"The water does make a difference, then. We need to be sure everyone in Vastai knows what to do. Messengers aren't a bad idea."
"Lord Direction," you acknowledged, "we could spread word about keeping the water clean, and where we find people who aren't sick, we can ask them to help with those who are."
"If they aren't doing that already," Dera put in.
"Just so," you agreed. "And we could use people to help fill bottles and flasks for others to carry to those who need it. In the meantime, I'll send people here as I find them for this good woman," you nodded at the older woman you'd first addressed, "to send wherever they seem most useful."
You didn't wait for a reply, only bowed to Dera and strode out into the square. You worked all night, carrying water and corpses, sending messengers, a fleet of children, the core of which was three young girls you'd found weeping in the street. You gave them their charge with such seriousness that they immediately took up their duties to deliver news and recruit more of their fellows with sober, single-minded determination. In the depths of the night, one of them came across you and told you, entirely seriously, that she had marched up to the guard at the fortress gate, and claiming your authority, she had heard someone mention your connection to Mawat, demanded to know why the Lys hadn't sent more help into the city.
"After all," she said, exhaustedly indignant, "even the Lady Tikas is helping draw water, and she's not right in her head."
The guard had only stared at her, and then told her to go home to bed. There were enough troubles within the fortress. You came back to the guest house just before the sun rose. You smelled of smoke. There had been two more fires in the night. The square was empty except for Tikas, slumped dishevelled on the cold stones with a rough-woven blanket around her shoulders, apparently asleep, and a single guard at the fortress gate. Seeing this, you stopped and frowned, and then you went into the guest house, conferred quietly with a few people still awake and sitting at the tables. More than a dozen others lay scattered around the floor and under the tables, fast asleep, including several of your youthful messengers, and then went out again. Tikas seemed to have awakened. Now she sat in the middle of the square, doubled over, her arms crossed on her stomach, and Askel and Arkim stood over her. Askel, speaking to Tikas, leaned over and laid his hand on her shoulder. You started forward, knife drawn, walking at first and then breaking into a run, as Tikas unfolded her arms and drove the knife she held into Askel, just below his ribs, angled upward. Askel gasped, looked down at her hand as she yanked hard on the knife, and surged to her feet. She grabbed Arkim's shirt, pulled him towards her, and pushed the knife up to his throat. He caught her wrist, pushed her back, and she cried out in frustrated rage and then bit his hand. Askel dropped to his knees, his hands over his breast. Arkim cried out and loosened his grip on Tikas, just enough for her to wrench her wrist free and stab at him, but the knife caught in his cloak. You reached them then, and Tikas dropped the knife and fled. Askel fell over, to lie on the ground, unmoving. By now the guard stationed at the fortress gate had reached you, and another was coming into the square.
"Stop her!" Arkim cried. "She's murdered my brother!" "Which of you killed her father?" you asked.
At that moment, a horse came staggering into the square, covered in mud and scratches, bleeding, gasping. The boy on its back slid down, staggered himself, and then the horse gave two lurching steps and collapsed onto the stones of the square. I'm sure you recognize the boy, because suddenly all your attention was on him, as though you had forgotten Arkim entirely.
"The Lys!" said the boy, choked and breathy. "The Lys! The Lord Mawat!"
He caught sight of you, swayed.
"It's you! Tell the Lord Mawat! They're all dead. The Tell attacked this... No, it was yesterday. I don't know how many. There's nothing between them and Vastai but the forest."
He dropped to his knees beside the dead horse and put his head in his hands and began to weep. Everyone in the square was frozen, staring at him, you with increasing horror as you understood what he had just said.
"Can you walk?"
you asked him, and turned to the guard.
"The Lys needs to see him. The directions need to see him. Right now."
"And who are you to be giving me orders?" asked the guard.
"I fell," said the boy. "I don't know if I can walk."
He raised his head to look at you.
"You'll listen."
Tears streaked his face.
"You can tell the Lord Mawat. Tell him now. You have to."
"I know this boy," you said to the guard, your voice sharp, as though you were giving orders to a soldier under your authority. "He's a messenger for us in the south. If he says the border defence is overwhelmed, then the Lys and the directions need to know it."
You bent, helped the boy to his feet. "Let's go," you said, a touch more gently.
"Well, They can't get past the forest, said the guard after a moment. The guard won't let them.
You manage not to reply to that, and instead put your arm around the boy's shoulders and walked with him into the fortress. The fortress yard was all but deserted, the only sound the occasional chirr of a raven and the clank and thunk of a bucket as a servant drew water. At the sound, the boy broke away from you and went limping toward the well. You reached him in a step, caught his arm.
Stop, you said. Don't drink from there. I'll get you some beer from the kitchen.
I don't want beer, the boy whispered. I need water.
Not that water.
You hesitated, looked over toward the tower, back at the boy, and then made up your mind and pulled him toward the kitchens. Fortunately, he was too weak to do anything but go where you led him. Gizard greeted you at the kitchen door with,
It's you then, is it? Still on your feet, I see.
Though you hadn't spoken to her since she'd given you your meal and lodging tokens days and days ago.
Auntie, you said, greatly presuming, this boy rode all night from the border, and he has an urgent message for the lease and the directions, but he desperately needs something to eat and drink. He doesn't have a token, but he's one of our messengers. He's known to me and to the Lord Mawat.
She looked at the boy, gave you an appraising look, and then shouted over her shoulder and turned back to you. Stood aside as the maidservant came from the well with a full bucket, slumping and exhausted.
You didn't drink from the well then? Gieset asked.
What's wrong with the well?
Asked the boy hoarsely.
It's,
you began, but perhaps were unsure of how to explain.
The water has sickness in it, said Gieset. Don't go in the hall. Any of them still alive is lying there doubled over with pain and shitting themselves. The ones who wouldn't listen to me, anyway.
Mother Zazume spoke to you then,
you said.
About the water?
A servant appeared behind Gieset with a leather bottle of water and a hunk of bread, and Gieset took them and handed them to the boy.
Drink that, child.
And then to you was the boy gulped from the bottle.
Mother Zazume did speak to me, but I haven't spent all my life in this kitchen. I've been over to Ardvustia, and farther than that. I started boiling water as soon as I saw the yard flooded. It's why Mother Zazume isn't sick herself.
And then, addressing herself to the boy again,
when you've delivered your message, come back, and I'll give you more.
Thank you,
said the boy.
Thank you, Auntie,
you said, and turned, taking the boy's arm.
Sir,
he said as you pulled him along,
how can there be sickness in the water? The forest protects us from sickness.
He did not add, there's only the forest between us and the tell.
I don't know, you said.
And then, when you were nearly to the door of the tower, he asked,
how do you keep from crying?
He'd begun weeping again.
I don't always,
you admitted.
Sometimes you can't.
Oh,
said the boy. The guard didn't want to let you in. He'd had no word of your coming. He could not leave his post, and there was no one to send to ask. Anyone who might have run the message for him was sick. He had seen you in the tower before, though, and so, in the end, he waved you up the stairs. The audience room was damp and chill, the brazier unlit. Arkim was there, away from the entrance, his back to the wall, staring balefully at Hebal, who sat white-clad on the bench. Around the dais stood a half-dozen of the Council of the Directions, in grey and red and black embroidered robes. The Lord Direction Dera was among them. He was addressing Hebal as you came into the room.
Forest has always been difficult to deal with, and that is a concern for Mother Zazume. But you, Raven's Lease, must acknowledge that there are serious concerns about the Raven's failure to protect us. Is this happening because...
He fell silent when he saw you and the boy. Over by the wall, Arkim stared stonily at you.
"We don't have time for foolishness," Hebal observed. "Why are you here, Ayolo?"
You nudged the boy forward.
"Lord Councillors," he began. "Raven's Lease."
He looked around.
"Where is the Lord Mawat?"
"That," said Hebal dryly, "is a question we would all like the answer to."
The boy frowned, confused, one more distress on top of all the others.
"Lords,"
he said, his voice shaking,
"I have urgent news. We went out to attack the Tell. The Lord Airu is in command now that the Lord Mawat is... The Lord Airu learned that almost the whole Tell force was camped not far off from where we were, in a place between the hills, where we could surround them and take them by surprise while they slept, if we were quick and careful."
You closed your eyes and made a small noise. I think you couldn't help yourself. The boy continued.
"So we did that. The Lord Airu gathered all of our forces that he could, and we surrounded them and waited and..."
His voice failed him. He swallowed.
"They were just shirts, stuffed with grass. But I swear we saw people moving in the camp and heard them, and horses. But there was no one there, and by the time we realised..."
"They attacked you,"
Hebal guessed. His voice was even and steady, his face expressionless.
"How many escaped?"
"I don't know, Raven's Lease."
The boy was weeping again.
"I got away and I rode here as fast as I could. The stupid horse kept..."
The Lord Directiondera said sharply.
"There are fortified encampments all along the southern edge of the Iridani territory, and men ride in between them regular patrols. If one post has been overwhelmed, the others near it can surely come to assist. And as for Vastai being threatened, there is a walled camp full of soldiers guarding the road where it enters the forest. The Lord Airu is hardly a brilliant tactician, but surely he wasn't stupid enough to empty that camp, let alone pull every nearby border patrol for a single opportunity to ambush the Tell."
You made a rough exhalation that might in other circumstances have been a bitter laugh. Dera looked at you, frowning.
"My lords," said the boy, "the Lord Airu had learned that the Tell had heard about the instrument being near death, that on this account they thought Iridan would be weak. They believed they had something that would let them pass through the forest. They, along with the honour, decided to put all their resources into an attack on the forest road camp, to be certain of overwhelming it, and then move as quickly as they could through the forest of Astai. The Lord Airu said that it was a good thing the Lord Mawat wasn't there, because the Lease's heir would spend all his time thinking about what to do next, and then would do something small and cautious. Where here, we had the opportunity to hurt the Tell so badly, they never troubled us again. If only we could act boldly, as we should have done all along. He ordered all the camps and patrols in reach to come ambush the Tell and be ready to press forward into Tell territory."
After a silent moment, the Lord Dera said,
"They knew the instrument was near death, so they knew the Lord Mawat would be called away, and the Lord Airu left in command."
He closed his eyes. "We'll have lost all the districts south of the forest, at the very least."
"They won't come any farther than the forest," said Hebal with a dismissive wave. "They aren't aiming at Vastai itself."
"May I remind the Lease," said One Direction angrily, "that fully a third of Iridan is on the other side of the forest."
"And this messenger," put in Dera, "has said that they do indeed aim at Vastai." "He also said, Lord Direction," replied Hebal, "that the Tell were all camped together, when they were not."
He turned his attention to the boy.
"Are the Tell actually on their way here at this moment?"
asked Hebal.
"I don't know,"
the boy confessed.
"The forest is between us and them," said one of the other directions. "How can they be?"
"The forest should have been between us and sickness," said another, "and yet..."
There was a long silence.
"Could the Tell have found some way to attack the forest itself?"
asked Dera.
"Have they found some god powerful enough to help them in this? Did they tempt Stalker into another bargain? Is she strong enough to do this? And could that be the reason half of Vastai is incapacitated right now?"
On the bench, Hebal closed his eyes.
"Surely not," he said.
"And why has the raven done nothing?"
asked Dera.
"Raven's lease. I think we might need to consult with the raven directly. I think we might need to consider the question of the payment due to that god."
"That matter is settled," said Hebal, opening his eyes again. "And the raven has always told us that by dealing with matters ourselves, we give him more and better opportunities to assist us, even if the Tell are on their way to Vastai. They surely won't kill their horses to get here. We have a few days at least. The matter of this sickness that has struck down so many and the fires is more pressing at this moment. We should make some provision for..."
"Raven's lease," you said. "As to illness, a few people are already beginning to recover. All of Vastai has been dealing with that and with the fires with no help from the fortress."
"That was you then, was it? Sent that urchin to importune the gate guard?"
asked Hebal.
"She did that on her own initiative, Lord,"
you replied,
"and she was right to do it. I'm only ashamed I didn't do it myself. But it seems to me the directions and the bench might be best advised to turn their attention to the Tell."
"Between his actions last night and his words today," said Dera, "I see why the Lord Mawat relies on the good Aeolo's counsel in the field." "Surely, if we consult the Raven of Iriden directly, he will tell us a great many things we wish to know,"
said one of the other directions, an edge to his voice, as though this might have been a point of contention before you entered. The other directions present made noises of agreement.
"I have already consulted the god," asserted Hebal. "I was in the midst of consulting when you all demanded to meet with me."
"But Raven's lease," said one of the directions, "as we were saying before the good Aeolo and this brave messenger arrived, the senior member of this council was not in attendance, and neither was the mother of the silent. And you won't have consulted the god about this business with the Tell, since we all of us have only just now heard of it."
"The Lord Radihor is dead," replied Hebal, "and his replacement is gravely ill. Mother Zizume is injured and cannot attend. The situation is serious enough that I would not delay seeking aid."
At that point, Zizume entered the room, walking slowly, leaning on her servant. All the directions present bowed.
"Mother of the Silent,"
they murmured.
"Mother Zizume,"
Hebal greeted her, alarm evident in his tone.
"Are you well enough to be exerting yourself like this?"
"I appreciate your concern, Hebal," said Zizume, "but I'm not so badly injured that I can't attend to urgent matters, which these clearly are. I heard a messenger had come from the south with dire news."
And then to her servant, "Take this boy to Geeset." She gestured toward the messenger beside you, who swayed. You put your hand on his shoulder. "Tell her he's to stay in the same guest house as the good Aeolo, on the same terms. If there's no room available,
I'm sure Aeolo can share. She gave you a sharp look. Can't you?
Yes, Mother,
you agreed.
Now, come over here, child, and let me lean on you.
You did as you were bidden, taking the servant's place as she led the messenger away.
Now, what's to do?
Mother Jejume, said Hibal, as you know, there's been sickness sweeping through Vastai and fires.
Contrary to our agreements with the God of the Silent and with the Raven,
put in Lord Direction Dera.
And now we hear that the Tell have used trickery to defeat our entire force south of the forest.
Jejume closed her eyes.
Airu,
she murmured.
Airu,
Dera agreed.
The Tell may or may not be on their way here to attack Vastai,
continued Hibal, as though neither of them had spoken.
Indeed, said Jejume, opening her eyes.
You must have thought I was quite unwell indeed, to have had such news and not sent for me. I heard as I came into the room a suggestion that the Raven be consulted for information and advice. I thought I heard that you, Ravensleys, had consulted the god on a matter concerning the governance of Irriden without either the council or myself in attendance, contrary to ancient agreement. But that can't be possible. I must have heard wrong. Surely the chief of the directions was with you, even if I was not.
The Lord Radihor's successor is sick, Mother,
said Dera,
like so many others. I am senior of the councillors here, though I never expected to be in this position, and I cannot read the tokens well.
I can read the tokens, said Hibal, in a reassuring voice.
Yes, of course you can.
Jejume spoke sharply, almost impatiently.
So can I. The question is, can any of the directions read them, who are well enough to be here?
No one answered.
Both the Lys and the chief of the directions must be present at any such consultation with the god when it concerns a matter of state. Now then, Mother Jejume,
said Hibal smoothly, reproving.
It has been a very long time since the tower and the directions were so mistrustful of each other.
Trust doesn't enter into it, Ravensleys,
said Dera.
Mother Jejume is right, that we can't wait, and I'm willing to rely on Mother Jejume's reading of the tokens. I know she's more expert than I am.
We can't wait, agreed another direction. The Tell are very possibly on their way here, and most of what defenders we may have are too sick to fight. Yesterday, I would have said that the forest would keep them away from Vastai, but today...
He gestured helplessly.
It would be helpful if the God of the Silent were less silent, Mother Jejume. Not that I blame you for that.
He looked toward Hibal.
It was your heir, Ravensleys, who desecrated the House of the Silent and laid violent hands on the mother of that house.
Hibal gave a mournful sigh.
I don't know why the Lord Mawat did such a terrible thing. I can only say he hasn't seemed to be in his right mind lately, and...
He shook his head.
Obviously, recent events have been more than we could deal with. I only thank the Raven that we've discovered this weakness of his now, rather than after he was put on the bench.
Silence from the directions, from Jejume. You had to force yourself not to make a protesting noise. Hibal continued.
Since you all seem not to trust my word about the god's advice, we should perhaps be extra cautious. Given that this is indeed an emergency, and anything the Raven tells us will be of extreme importance, we must be sure that we all trust that the message as conveyed is accurate. It may be that we must delay asking our questions for just a bit, until we can solve this problem.
"It's hardly a problem, Ravenslease," protested Dara. "I've already said that..."
"Ravenslease," you interrupted. "You can ask yes or no."
Hibal stared at you.
"Anyone can read that,"
you continued.
"Two tokens face up for yes, two face down for no. One and one for questions that cannot be sufficiently answered with yes or no."
He stared at you for a moment, as if realizing that your suggestion was based on experience that he was sure you ought not to have had. Then he said,
"We would be sadly limited in what we could ask. It makes more sense to find someone who can both read the tokens and fulfill the agreement between the raven and the forest."
"But Ravenslease," insisted Dara, "Aeolo's idea is a good one. There are any number of very useful questions that could be answered that way, such as, are the Tell indeed on their way here? If we knew the answer to that, we would know better what actions to take next. I really don't see what reason there is to delay even a moment more."
"We need more than just yes or no," insisted Hibal, "and I won't have it said that there was any reason at all to mistrust the words of the god."
The directions present frowned and cast uncomfortable, disbelieving glances at each other.
"Please excuse me, lords," you said before anyone could say anything else, "but if the Lys were to read the tokens, and then we were to ask if that reading had been accurate or faithful, yes or no, that would be something everyone could read and understand."
There was a moment's silence. Then Dara said, "Good, Aeolo. I imagine if you had been the Lord Iru's aide instead of the Lord Mawat's, a good deal of our troubles today might have been prevented."
"Lord," you replied, "Lord Iru would never have listened to me."
"Let us not make the same mistake," said Jejume.
"Let us question the Raven of Iriden immediately on the terms that the good Aeolo has so happily suggested." All this time, Arkim had watched and listened in silence. Now he said vehemently,
"The good Aeolo stood by while the Lady Tikas murdered my brother."
"It's a serious accusation," said Dara, "and we will be sure to consider it, just as soon as the threat to all of Iriden is dealt with."
"Can you blame him, Lord Direction Dara?" asked Hibal, before Arkim could make his bitter reply. "If your brother were dead, would you have much attention for anything else?"
"My brother may well be dead," retorted Dara, "or will be soon enough, and the rest of my family with him, as well as quite a few others' brothers. I have sympathy for Arkim's grief. I'm sure we all do. But we must deal with the threat to Iriden first."
Yes, of course we must," said Hibal. "Good, Arkim."
"You," began Arkim, stepping toward Lord Direction Dara.
"Arkim!" Hibal sharply. "We will deal with your complaint, I give you my word, but now is the time for patience. We must carefully consider our questions for the Raven, but you can speed things if you go above and make things ready for us. So many servants are ill. No one has cleared away the remains of yesterday's offering, and I know we will want a fire lit."
Arkim stared, angry and incredulous. Hibal said,
"The more quickly we do this, the sooner we can deal with Askel's murder."
Arkim stared a moment more, then turned and stalked out of the room. For a moment, everyone stood tense and silent. Then Hibal said,
"Now, let us consider our questions. And someone must fetch the tokens from Radihor's chamber."
"You have the tokens right there," said Jejume, pointing to where the gold and black bag sat on a corner of the bench. You shivered. You knew that bag had not been there the moment before. Hibal knew as well as you did where it must have come from, what its sudden presence meant. He stared at it with barely concealed horror. "We know what we need to ask," objected Dara, before Hibal had a chance to say anything or even change his expression. Are the Tell on their way? If so, when will they be here and what should we do? Anything more we can only decide on once we have those answers.
Exactly right, agreed Jejume. There's no reason for delay, and every argument against it. Come, child.
This to you.
Help me up the stairs.
There was no guard at the top of the tower. You and Dera, carrying Jejume between you, found only Arkim, standing by the newly lit fire in the brazier. The day was well advanced by now, the sun high, the blue sky streaked with light feathery clouds. Hibal, coming out of the stairs behind you, said,
"Here we are, Lord Dera, Mother Jejume."
He hefted the bag of tokens.
"I will ask and cast. But this yes or no business, how do we put this proposition to the god?"
"Lords," you said, stepping forward, leaving Jejume on Dera's arm.
"Like so."
You pulled your two tokens from under your shirt, the one for meals and the other to allow you into the fortress, laid them both inlaid side down.
"Raven," you said, "god of Vastai, the acting chief of the Council of the Directions can't read the tokens well, and the law requires that both the tower and the council have accurate knowledge of your answers. By means of these tokens, the Lord Dera can ask you if your messages are being accurately reported to us, and you can confirm or deny this. Two tokens face up for yes, two face down for no, as they are now, and one for questions that cannot be sufficiently unambiguously answered by such means. Do you understand?"
The two tokens rose, flipped, and settled again, inlaid side up. Hibal stared at them in horror. After a moment of silence, Dera said,
"That seems very clear."
For the first time since you had heard him speak that day, he sounded afraid.
"Am I the Lord Mawat?" you asked,
and the tokens flipped again. "No."
"Well,"
said Hibal, looking at the tokens and then at you. And it was as though some thought had struck him, and his expression changed to one of slightly puzzled relief, which he tried to conceal with a thoughtful frown.
"Let us begin, then, I suppose."
"Yes," said the tokens. Hibal held out both his hands, the black and gold bag on his palms.
"God of Vastai, we have learned this morning that we have suffered a catastrophic defeat by the Tell, and that they may be on their way to Vastai. Is this true? Are the Tell coming here in force?"
He tilted his hands and shook the bag, and three tokens spilled out.
"It is, and they are," Hibal read.
"God of Vastai, is this what you said?"
asked Dera. Your two tokens rose, spun, landed, both inlaid side up. "Yes."
"Will the forest not prevent them?" asked Jejume.
This time the bag fell out of Hibal's hands and tokens spilled out.
"It will not. They will be here by this time tomorrow,"
read Hibal. Before Dera could ask, your two tokens rose and spun again. "Yes."
"Then what are we to do?" asked Dera.
"Trust in the god of Vastai," said Hibal, with growing assurance.
He frowned at him, thinking, I'm sure, of the events of the past few days, of things you'd heard Hibal himself say. He had intended to kill the raven, had killed that god's instrument,
and then prevented the god's Lys from sacrificing himself. Surely you doubted his sincerity when he spoke of trusting the god of Vastai. Doubted that he would be calm in the face of any demonstration of the raven's survival and continued power.
"Why does the forest not protect us?" asked Jejume. "What god is talking to us?"
you asked. Jejume seemed not to have heard you, but Dera stared, astonished at your question.
Hebal smiled.
"What god can it be but the god of Vastai?"
"Where are the Zhulans?"
you asked him.
"Where is their snake?"
"Where is the forest?" demanded Jejume. "Answer me. Why does it not protect us?"
The tokens rose, rearranged themselves.
"The forest has done nothing for many years now,"
Hebal read, with some satisfaction. Perhaps he was glad to be diverted from your questions.
"Perhaps that god is dead."
"Yes," confirmed your two tokens.
"I don't believe it," Jejume protested. "It's not true. The forest has done many things. He's spoken to me often."
But there it was before her on the sunlit yellow stone, the words of a god, saying plainly that the god of the silent had not done so.
"We can discuss that question later, Mother Jejume," said Hebal. "Right now the teller on their way and will be here tomorrow. We need to consult and to make what preparations we can in the time available to us. Once Vastai is secure, we can ask questions about the god of the silent."
"Where is Depeju and his snake?"
you insisted.
"What can the Zhulans have to do with any of this?"
asked Hebal.
"I fear, Aiolo, that you've been taken ill and are raving. Arkim, fetch a guard and—"
And suddenly, Mawat was behind Hebal. Everyone, Hebal, Arkim, Dera, Mother Jejume, even you, though you surely had suspected Mawat was there, stood paralysed with surprise, speechless, as Mawat grabbed Hebal's hair and pulled his head back, laid a knife against his throat. Mawat said, into your shocked silence,
"As usual, Aiolo cuts to the core of things. I have been in the tower these last 2 days, and I heard everything I needed to hear. My uncle—"
he pushed the blade of his knife just a bit harder into Hebal's throat—
"killed the dying instrument, and bound my father, and dragged him below so that he would be unable to pay the Lys. To my father's shame, Hebal succeeded in preventing him. Or I should say, my father failed in his duty. I found him still alive below just days ago, the coward. Isn't that so, God of Vastai?"
"Yes," said the pair of tokens. Dera stood frozen in horror.
"Oh, you treacherous worm," cried Jejume.
It was unclear if she meant Hebal, or Mawat's father, or both.
"My uncle," Mawat continued, "thought that the raven was weak and near death. He thought that a god-spoken stone below the tower was in fact fulfilling the raven's obligations to Iriden."
"There is such a stone,"
you confirmed.
"I've seen it."
Dera looked at you, now aghast.
"But my lord—"
"I never would have known about it if not for you,"
Mawat said to you.
"I was sure you were lying. I should have known better. I've known your worth since I met you, and if I hadn't been— if I had been able to admit to myself that my father might have failed in his duty, I'd have listened to you sooner. I've treated you very badly in all this, Aiolo, and you've been unceasingly loyal. I won't forget that ever again."
"But the forest—"
began Jejume.
"The god of the silent is long dead," said Mawat.
My uncle hoped to kill the raven as well by denying him his lease. He thought the stone would continue to protect Iriden while he looked for some new god to serve in the raven's stead. He led the Julans to believe that their snake god might have the office, if only they would help him to the bench. Do I speak the truth, God of Vastai?
Yes, confirmed the pair of tokens. Silence, except for the wind and the gulls and the faint sound of the waves below. Dera frowned, opened his mouth to say something, but no sound came out.
But Hebal...
Here Mawat pulled Hebal's head back just a bit farther, cheated the Julans. Once on the bench, he wouldn't see them, or when he did, he wouldn't talk about the promises he had made to them.
Until sickness swept through the city and the fortress, and the directions, the ones left standing anyway, began to question whether Hebal needed to pay the lease himself. My uncle couldn't have that, so he invited Depeju here late last night, and he and his snake have been all this time in the lease's chamber, negotiating the terms by which Iriden will be surrendered to the control of a Julan god. Dupeju is there still.
Lies!
Hebal croaked.
Lies! Agreed Arkim.
Mawat gave a bitter laugh.
God of Vastai. Am I telling the truth?
It's complicated, replied the tokens. And then, the reason for Hebal's odd confidence, before Mawat had revealed himself, became plain to all. As Depeju came up out of the stairwell that led beneath the tower, the snake he carried curled around his neck, its brown head held up over his shoulder, as it stared, unblinking at you all, its tongue sampling the air.
I am find this interesting, said Dupeju. Ravensleys, I am waiting your room for you to return, but you are not return. There is a guard, but he is become sick. I am think I would like to see the top of the tower. And so I am find this. I am go down and see things, and I am come up and hear things.
That's impossible, said Jejume, but without conviction. After all, she had just seen Depeju come up out of that stairwell.
This is all impossible.
Depeju spread his hands, seemingly helpless to explain.
I am here, Mother Jejume. The Lisi's heiress say the truth, but I am not want this. I am come here only to go over the water and go north. We are here, there may be gold the way north.
The brown snake at his neck still stared, head still raised, tongue flickering out and back.
Are you not tell me before, Ravensleys Hebal, that no one is go down these stairs and come back up alive who is not Ravensleys?
He paused, as though waiting for Hebal to answer, but Hebal stood silent in Mawat's grip, knife at his throat.
And yet I am go down and I am come back up and I am here alive.
It is that your god is not harm me, or it is that your god is too weak to do as he is say. I am think your raven is dead, or almost nearly dead.
You're wrong, said Mawat. The raven is not dead.
Then why is your raven not do the things he is to do? Asked Depeju. The teller come through the forest, which I am here is impossible, both your god of Iriden forbid it, and yet they come. So many of your soldiers are dead. This is true. I have heard it. So much of the city is in sickness. Who will defend you when the teller come?
But I am familiar with the tell. They know me. I am speak the language.
The tell are not danger to me.
He shrugged. The snake's tongue flickered.
And here is a god.
He gestured to the snake at his neck.
The god is help you or is not. I think there is not much time, and I am think the raven's lethe Hebal will die soon.
He waved toward the knife at Hebal's throat and smiled.
It may be we can help you, Lise's heir, Mawat.
No, said Mawat. The raven will help us, as he always has. None of this is happening because the raven is dead. How could he be? No, this is happening because of my father's cowardice and my uncle's greed.
Depezu shrugged again, and then walked over to sit on one of the seats along the parapet.
I am wait.
Wait, then,
scoffed Mawat, his knife still held across Hebal's throat, and Hebal made a small, distressed noise.
My lord, you said.
Since the messenger's arrival, you'd been filled with dread and dismay, which had only grown until now you were nearly overcome with it.
My lord, listen to me. If the raven is alive, then how can the tell be riding here? They shouldn't be. But if the raven is dead, who is speaking to us now?
Everyone except Mawat and Hebal turned to look at Depezu, sitting on the stone seat, leaning apparently relaxed against the wall, the brown snake curled around his neck. The snake opened its mouth and said,
"Is not I."
You frowned and then said,
"No, no, you can't read the tokens, can you? Or even speak Iridani well enough to do it."
"This is a thing that is often happen," said Depezu with a wave of agreement. "This is a way of speaking to gods that is always give an answer, even when no answer is. You are lay down these pieces, and you are make some message from them. Not from any god. It is a thing to have care about. You are easily see what is please you best."
Mawat gave a short, sharp laugh. "No, Depezu, that's not what's happening here." You could no longer restrain yourself.
"God, who's speaking to us? Are you the raven of Iridan?"
The black and gold bag at Hebal's feet twitched, and tokens flew out of it, arranged themselves in a neat line on the stones before him. "Beside you," Jejume gasped.
"Ah,"
said Depezu, still apparently at ease.
"So your raven is of just enough strength to move these pieces of wood. I am think he has a little more than this."
"What does it say?"
you asked urgently.
"You've asked me this question before, Aiolo," Jejume read,
and gave you a look full of accusing dread.
"Were you not satisfied with the answer?"
"No,"
you said.
"I was not."
"I am the god of Vastai, the sustainer of Iridan," Jejume read as the tokens rearranged themselves again, her voice shaking. "There is no other god in this tower but the Zhulan snake."
Your own two tokens confirmed it.
"Yes." "Who else would it be?" asked Dera. "Hey, Olo, what do you suspect?"
"I don't know," you cried. "But this is all wrong. None of the raven's promises are being kept. How can this be him?"
Mawat frowned, looked at you, as he still held firmly to Hebal.
"How can it not be?"
The tokens rearranged themselves again.
"I will settle all Aiolo's doubts soon enough," Jejume read. "This much is true. My enemies have drained me of power, and if I am
to deal with the problems besetting Iriden. I must have your help. Hebal is no longer Lys. Give me his death, Mawat. I will take it as payment, and you will succeed him. And the confirmation. Yes.
No!
You insisted.
My lord, please listen to me. Don't do this. This isn't the raven. I'm sure it's not, but I can't say how. We could ask more questions. We should think more about what the best course might be. Deal with your uncle after we've made some plan to deal with the Tell. Maybe we can make a temporary bargain with a Zhulan snake. At least we'd know what we were dealing with.
It is a good idea, friend Eolo, said Yupezu. We are do this favor for you, if only we are go safely north after and come back through Iriden with no trouble. We are want nothing more.
I notice your god didn't say that itself, said Dera.
You always ask questions and look into things, said Mawat to you, tightening his grip on Hebal's hair. And that's why you nearly always give good advice. But I've been here in this tower, watching and listening. All of this is because of Hebal. He wanted the privileges of the bench without having to pay for them. And for this, he condemns his brother, steals my inheritance, and schemes to sell Iriden to whatever god will solve his immediate problems, so long as the cost is not too high to himself.
My lord,
you began.
But Mawat went on. He tried to kill the raven. He thought that he had, but...
With a nod towards the tokens scattered on the stones, he failed.
Don't tell me to think more about this. I've been thinking. And the first thing we need to do is what my father failed to do. What my uncle...
The word came out nearly a snarl.
Had no intention of doing. The first thing we do is pay the raven. Then we'll deal with the rest of it.
My lord, wait!
You cried. Mawat slashed the knife across Hebal's throat.
For you, god of Vastai!
Blood spurted, spilled crimson on Hebal's white shirt as he gasped and choked and fell to the stones clutching his neck.
I'm Lys now, said Mawat, or near enough.
Yes, said the tokens. He turned to Depeju. Now let's deal with the other matters. All of this was because of my uncle, but it was also because of you. He stepped over Hebal's blood-stained body.
Oh, Lys is Mawat,
said Depeju, standing, putting his hand on his own knife.
I am think this is a bad idea for you. I am with a god who may kill you with a word.
But I'm Lys now, Mawat pointed out, which means that anyone who even tries to kill me will die. Isn't that right, god of Vastai? On the stones, your two tokens said, yes. Dupeju smiled grimly.
Ravenslis, Mawat, it is not simple to kill a god, and your raven is not so strong as you are think.
My lord,
you cried,
don't! This isn't the raven, it's the stone!
Ah, I knew that you would recognize me at last. Had you realized what it might mean that Mawat had just given me the life of Hebal, once Ravenslis of Iriden? It is a stronger offering, oh, far stronger than milk or water. And though I have indeed sustained Iriden until quite recently, I have made no promises binding me to Iriden's welfare. I am certain that in this moment you understood all this. And in that same moment, Arkim plunged toward Mawat, knife raised. You moved to stop him. Managed to grab his wrist.
Let him,
said Mawat, with a laugh, not even turning toward you, still facing Dupeju and his snake.
My life belongs to the god of Vastai.
Arkim wrenched free of your grasp, surged forward, stumbled over Hebal's body. His knife grazed Mawat's arm as he fell dead at Mawat's feet.
Mawat did not even glance at him, did not even seem to notice his sliced sleeve or his own blood welling, dripping to his wrist. He looked only at Depeju and Depeju's god.
"You see,"
he said to Depeju.
"That is a simple thing," said Depeju. "A small thing to stop a heart. If you are know how this works, truly it is nothing."
The snake's tongue licked the air.
"But I am asked, can your raven do more than this? While I am in Vastai, I am see proof of his weakness. Is this,"
he gestured toward Hibal's body,
"a thing that happens if that god is strong? Ask yourself, Raven's Lease Mawat. You are have other matters in your attention, and we are only pass through."
"I do indeed have other matters requiring my attention," replied Mawat coldly. Bloody knife still in hand, seemingly relaxed, but he had not even glanced at Hibal's body when Depeju had gestured at it, only kept his gaze fixed on Depeju and the snake, intent. "You are travelling to discover things to your own advantage, to yours, to your snake gods, to Jula's. Hibal proposed to sell Iriden to you, and you entertained his proposal. That tells me what you are, and what you will do in the future. If I allow you to cross the strait, you will eventually be back to cause trouble again, and you are too well known among the Tell for me to leave you alive on this side of the water."
"My lord,"
you said, your voice trembling with anxiety,
"I'm telling you, it's not the raven speaking, it's the stone, and we don't know what it's doing or what it wants. Let Depeju and his god cross. We can't trust them, but let the snake say that they won't cause us trouble, now or coming back again, and then let's deal with the Tell."
"Listen to your advisor, Raven's Lease," said Dera. "I don't understand what he means about this stone, but I know him for a thoughtful, practical man. And so do you, Lord. Send these Julans away from here, now."
"Aiolo is thoughtful and practical," acknowledged Mawat, still staring at Depeju. "But he is not infallible."
He raised his knife, and the snake hissed.
"Whatever the snake promises, it is only to send some other Julan god against us. One who has given us no assurances at all."
"Mawat, you stupid boy!"
cried Jejume. She was weeping now, whether from the realization finally that the god of the silent was no longer any sort of power, or from her fears for Iriden, or for Mawat.
"Try to kill me," Mawat said to the snake. "You've seen what happened to Akim. That's what will happen to you if you try to kill me now."
"You will die, Rivensley's Mawat," said Depeju.
"I was born for nothing else," replied Mawat,
voice even and edged.
"And if I do, the god of Vastai will be that much more powerful, and Iriden will be rid of you."
"I am not want this,"
hissed the snake on Depeju's shoulder.
"But I am do it if it comes to it."
"Last chance, Ravensley's Mawat," said Depeju. "We are go away in peace, or we are go away fighting and leave destruction behind." "The god of Vastai will not allow it," said Mawat.
Knife in one hand, he raised the other with a beckoning gesture.
"Do your worst."
"I am accept your invitation,"
hissed the snake, and said something more that you could not understand. Mawat smiled, and then his eyes widened, and he swayed and fell to his knees, put his hand to his chest, gasping. You ran to him and knelt beside him.
"My lord!"
you cried, as he pitched forward onto the stones beside Hibal and Akim. You grabbed his shoulder,
tried to roll him over, but he was slack and still, unbreathing, dead.
"It is a simple thing," said the snake, "if you are know how it is done."
"Counselor," said Depeju. Dera looked away from Mawat's body, stared at Depeju, speechless, appalled.
"Mother Zezume." Zezume looked only at Mawat, her hands over her mouth, as though holding back some sound she could not stop herself from making.
Depeju made a small bow toward you, where you knelt, weeping beside Mawat's lifeless body.
"And the friend Ayollo, we are live yet, Riven or Stone. This god of Ashtai is not harm us. But we are go now, and you are not stop us or try to hurt us.
We are live yet," agreed the snake. "Where is this god of Ashtai?"
And then I spoke aloud, the very stones of the tower crying out to near deafen you all. "I am the strength and patience of the hill, and I am the god of Ashtai, who until now has sustained Iriden. And you, little snake, will not be the first god I have killed, no, nor even the second." You kneel beside Mawat's lifeless body, momentarily immobilized with terror. But you alone of everyone atop this tower have heard my voice before. And surely you knew that, late or soon, it would come to this. "Stand up, Ayollo. Wipe the tears from your eyes and look out over the water. I know you mourn for Mawat and fear for yourself, for Iriden. But while Mother Zezume and the Lord Direction Dera still stare, still unable to move from shock, while Depeju and his snake stand astonished, not yet understanding that both their lives are unavoidably forfeit, rise, Ayollo, and look. Do you see those wisps of white in the northeast? They are not clouds, but sails. Can you count them? Is your vision so acute? Perhaps not. I won't commit yet to a definite number. But I don't think they would have come except in strength. If my surmise is correct, there are many ships, and in the prow of one of them sits part of a stone that fell from the sky more than 10,000 years ago, iron and chunks of peridot. If my surmise is correct, it houses a god. My friend, the Myriad, one of the ancient ones, as am I." The raven said he had spoken the deaths of all the gods who fought for Ardvuthir. But even with the power of every small god of Iriden, even having taken all the god of the silent forest had, he could not make those words true. I still lived, and the myriad as well. The ancient gods are, I have been told, difficult to kill. Perhaps the raven thought, if he could just hold on long enough, his words would prevail, and he would be able to regain his strength. In the meantime, he could draw power from me to make up his lack, to keep himself alive from hour to hour, to meet his obligations to Iriden, and to conceal the fact that he was steadily weakening. Even after so long, if certain interests in Ardvuskdia had ever realized how easy it would be to break away from Vastai, well, that would have been the end of the raven. He was well aware of this. Given a bit more time, he might have realized that what kept him alive was the same god whose continued existence drained his power so relentlessly. "Go, Aiolo. Take Jejume's arm, you and Dera. Help her down the stairs and out of the tower. I do not bear her any ill will. Go, weeping as you are, to the guest house where Tikaz is hiding, waiting for dark, waiting for you. Take her by the hand and leave Vastai together. Go west with all speed and take refuge with her mother's family. You will go safely, unseen by your enemies. You are under my protection. As for the rest of Vastai, as for Iriden, well, that is another matter. They will all have to take their chances, with Stalker and the Tell, or with the Myriad. I have waited for this moment, patiently, watching, planning, making what small moves I might. It's nothing personal. It's just that the Raven and the God of the Silent tried to kill me. Perhaps you can understand that. I hope you can. Go, Aiolo. Leave this place. It's time for me to throw this tower down.
This has been a Hachette audio production of The Raven Tower, written by Anne Leckie, read by Adjoa Ando. The Raven Tower is also available in print and digital formats from Orbit, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 2019 by Anne Leckie. Audio production copyright 2019 by Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. Hachette Book Group supports the right to free expression and the value of copyright. The purpose of copyright is to encourage writers and artists to produce the creative works that enrich our culture. The duplicating, uploading, and distribution of this audiobook without permission is a theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like permission to use material from the audiobook, other than for review purposes, please contact permissions at hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales, is entirely coincidental.